Happy Saturday, and thank you for joining me on this episode of the Jeremiah Patterson Show. Do you know when you get those little Amber Alerts on your phone, like when a child is missing or something like, you know, wrong is happening, like regarding the weather or something? Those little loud reports that go off on your phone, literally like causing everyone to look at each other at once because it's so vibrant. Well, in 2018 in Hawaii, a similar thing like that happened, except it was not a missing child. It was not a weather report. It was something extremely more horrifying that happened in Hawaii. They all thought that they were going to die. Because at 8:07 in the morning on a Saturday, everyone's phone in Hawaii went off with a message that immediately caused wide-scale panic. This was the message in all caps, quote, "Ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill," end quote. What would you do if you got an alert like that? Well, I mean, you know, the rational response, people were running, people were screaming, people were yelling, people were, you know, crying hysterically. People were calling up family members to, you know, say goodbyes, conceivably, because they all literally thought they were going to die as a threat of a missile was heading to Hawaii. People were seeking shelter. This was not one of those fake scenarios from like that TV show, What Would You Do? You know, this was real. This was very much real. And for 38 minutes, the entire island of Hawaii went into a frenzy. Everyone thought that this was real, and everyone thought that their life was in danger.
This is not a drill.
The alert that sent a wave of fear across Hawaii was sent by an employee who thought the threat was real. Warning of an incoming ballistic missile, the message triggered panic.
A missile may impact on land or sea within minutes.
The false alarm came from this civil defense bunker on January 13th, 8:05 a.m., a routine drill by the overnight shift. A phone recording starts, exercise, 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 but includes, this is not a drill. 8:07 a.m., a day shift worker, fearing a real missile attack, warns the public from a computer. Then a drop-down menu asks, are you sure you want to send this alert? He clicks yes. Tonight, that employee has been fired.
He has performance issues, and throughout the 10 years, he has confused drills at least two times.
It takes 38 minutes to issue a new alert. No threat.
This is the state warning point.
Tonight, Vern Miyagi, the Emergency Management Agency administrator, has resigned, taking full responsibility. The FCC saying the state didn't have reasonable safeguards in place and didn't have a plan for what to do if a false alert was transmitted.
That's really serious. Like, that's life and death right there.
Really unprofessional.
Tonight, testing inside this bunker has been suspended, and so has the public's faith in the warning system.
Quote, tonight testing has been suspended inside this bunker, and so has the public's faith in the warning system, end quote. Well, that did not age well. That was reporting from NBC News at the time, and after that disaster in the system, there were wide-scale investigations, right? I mean, how could something like this happen? How does something of that magnitude get sent out to the citizens and wide-scale panic is ensued? And then 38 minutes later, oh, hey guys, wait, it's actually not real. There's no missile threat. You're all good. How does something like that happen? The official who inadvertently sounded that alarm, he was fired, and Congress even got involved here with the investigatory efforts. There were congressional hearings by the House Energy and Commerce Committee. It was just seen as a complete failure of leadership.
We are quite pleased with the level of cooperation we have received from the leadership of the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency thus far. We are disappointed, however, that one key employee, the person who transmitted the false alert, is refusing to cooperate with our investigation. We hope that person will reconsider.
We certainly do not want to overlook these successes, but as recent events have shown...
Did the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency need FEMA to sign off on a correction to the first push notification?
No.
Okay. There was some...
They did not need permission from either FEMA or the FCC.
How is it that a single government employee could trigger an alert without any kind of meaningful mechanism to sort of override or, you know, do you want to delete? Do you want to delete? You know, was there any? And so, do you have any light to shed on that basic question?
That's actually one of the issues that we're exploring as part of our investigation. What Hawaii's process, what happened, and what Hawaii's process was.
So there was a federal investigation to investigate what exactly happened in this case and what Hawaii's process was for that alert to be sent out just instantaneously without any further guidance or essentially precaution before sending something of that magnitude out to citizens. The failure of the system came at a time when the FCC was planning to update the country's wireless emergency alert system. There was a vote in Hawaii to overhaul the wireless emergency alert system because of that cataclysmic failure that frankly scared people out of their boots. And things were reviewed. Systems were looked at and new emergency guidance was put out in multiple reports. But the question lies, after all of that preparedness and training and review, how does a system like that fail again? How does that system fail again, once again, on a massive level? Tonight, we have a special report on the situation in Hawaii, the crisis that has been ensued. Of course, the wildfires recently have been quenched, of course. But tonight, we're covering this story from a different angle in a way that I feel that no one is really touching at the national level. We're just going to start here. For years, wildfire experts and residents of Maui had warned that something big was coming, right? A wildfire. Yes, it's common in Hawaii, but this wasn't just going to be any wildfire. It will be destructive. It'll ravage untamed and unperturbed by anything. And the state did agree with that sentiment by experts and residents of Maui. They agreed that something was coming. They published two reports on wildfire preparedness. They were in full anticipation and expectance of a major wildfire event in the state that would be life-changing. And on that note, that is where we begin tonight in this special report. Lahaina, Hawaii. It is a beautiful celestial village. And when the wildfires ravaged through the island, Lahaina was completely destroyed. Colossal eradication across the map. It was so horrific that the governor said it has been practically wiped off the map. Now, that was major. The most historic and imperative landmark in Hawaii's history had been destroyed. Lahaina is very important because it used to be the capital of Hawaii. It used to be the capital of the Hawaii Kingdom before the U.S. decided to take it and use it for commercial and capitalistic gain. When Hawaii was a kingdom, Lahaina was the capital. It is a very, very beautiful part. It plays a central part in Hawaii's history. It is imperative to them. It is a landmark in their history. And for that very essential and sacred place to effectively be declared wiped off the map with devastation of unimaginable proportions, it was horrifying. But there is a bigger story in Hawaii that no one is talking about at the national level. It has been heavily underreported and frankly a disservice to the victims of the wildfires. It's a story about when the fires started and how everyone found out in an unconventional way. As the fire became more prevalent in the town, the crisis was exacerbated by a multitude of issues. Fire hydrants became dry as the entire community's water system collapsed. Power lines went down. Firefighters were overwhelmed. Lahaina's 911 system even collapsed. And a very striking and unsettling but recurring theme in the story that we're learning is that the sirens never sounded. The sirens did not go off. A resident named Shane True was interviewed by the New York Times, and he told them that he initially called 911 because there was a fire. A power line had fallen, and there had been a loud pop. When he saw that, he immediately called the police, and they showed up along with the fire department about 6 minutes later. Then county officials said that everything was fine, nothing to see here, the fire is 100% contained. But it was not. Because when Shane True was out and coming back home, that's when he saw it again. The fire had returned. He told the New York Times, quote, "Oh my God, pack up the dogs. There's a fire there." A neighbor shouted back, quote, "It was like a freight train coming down the mountain. When I turned around, it was right there. That's how fast it was. I literally ran down the stairs, grabbed the cats and dogs, and backed up the drive through black smoke, fire, heat just flying through." End quote. The article goes on, "Have the authorities sent them any alerts or warnings?" "Oh, hell no," said a resident. End quote. So no one got any alerts. No one got anything. There was a wildfire that was known and expected to be coming for years. No one sounded the alarms. No one said or did anything. I mean, what's happening? Apparently people stood stunned as the flames were going, wondering what exactly was happening. This is from the New York Times, quote, "Only 3 hours before she found herself huddled in the Pacific Ocean, a barrage of embers and ash hurtling above her. Chelsea Denton Fuchs was lounging in her bed at the time with a fan, a pristine blue sky outside the window of her home that lies half a mile from the Lahaina waterfront on the Hawaii island of Maui. It was moments later when she caught a glimpse of smoke in the distance. At first, it was a wisp, but within minutes, it had grown thicker, rippling down the hillside on violent winds. She told her husband that she was worried. They had received no text alerts, no sirens, no evacuation orders, no sign for her and her neighbors," she said. "That Lahaina, a community of 13,000 that was once the capital of the Hawaii Kingdom, was on the cusp of incineration. But they knew what could happen in a wildfire. They grabbed a few essentials and prepared to leave in their cars." Quote, people were just like, "Oh, are you heading out? All right, be safe." End quote. So, I mean, let's just take a step back to process that for a second. One, no one knew. No one got any type of alert. No sirens were sounded, nothing. And two, because of that, people thought that this couple was just heading out on a vacation. A resident even asked them, "Oh, you're heading out? We'll be safe." Like, this was just a normal day in Hawaii. But it was not. The systems in the state failed on a massive level. No, this was not a missile alert, but it was another life or death threatening occasion. And this time, the systems did not sound. The systems did not work. It failed again. It was radio silence as these fires were rapidly approaching to everyone's surprise. No one was told to evacuate. And when they saw the wildfire, that's when they found out that there was a fire. They weren't told anything, but when they did find out, when they did see the fires, there was nowhere to go. It was too late. People were trapped. And the only two options at that point, when they finally saw the fires, the only two options were to escape. You know, you could try either by being burned alive while sitting in your car because the traffic was endless as everyone is trying to get out simultaneously because the systems did not sound. Or, you know, you could jump in the ocean because the fires were becoming so intense and so widespread that there was nowhere else to go because it was literally ravaging the land. And when it came to at least attempting to evacuate, many people were stuck. They were stranded in their cars, in this long line of cars. Others straight up just abandoned their cars as the fire got too close. Many people died trapped in their vehicles due to flames becoming so intense and so ferocious that it engulfed the entire vehicle and everyone inside of it. Times Radio out of the UK did an interview with a reporter for Hawaii News Now, and it was just completely heartbreaking. This is him telling the story of one of his colleagues and his family members just being, you know, taken, gone with the fire.
One of our reporters at our news organization found that he had three family members that were in a car, and they couldn't get out. And they were surrounded by the flames. And that's where they spent their last moments. Two adults and a child. And that's related directly to one of our reporters. So that reverberates throughout the newsroom. One of our reporters comes from, several of them come from Maui. And so we're on the island of Oahu, the capital city. And they have gone over, those that are from Maui, to Maui because they know the people, they know the places, and they can report on those things. However, for them, it's hard because it's their families that are directly affected.
Let's return to Hawaii now.
That was reporting once again from Times Radio out of the UK. A Hawaii family trapped in their car, quote, they spent their last minutes trapped in the car. Two adults and a child, completely heartbreaking. Completely heartbreaking. 38-year-old Cuevas Reyes told Hawaii News Now that if things had gotten any worse for her, quote, I would have told my children to jump in the ocean as well and be boiled alive by the flames. Or, you know, we could have just died from smoke inhalation and roasted in the car. End quote. In addition to the state's systems failing, cell phone sites were burnt. Two major roads that were effective escape routes were closed because the flames had caused power lines to fall, which blocked exiting. The New York Times says, quote, powerful emergency sirens never made a sound. Fire hoses almost ran dry. For those affected by the wildfires and lost everything, there is anger towards the state government, but also questions as to how the system failed on such a massive level and who was in charge. Well, what we're learning about the mismanagement and mishandling of this crisis is just mind-boggling and preposterous. Frankly, because people don't know who exactly was in charge. This was the headline at Hawaii News Now. As Maui burned, Hawaii's top emergency management officials were at Waikiki Conference. Apparently, they were being educated on how to respond to a crisis of this magnitude instead of actually fighting the fire. Gina Lawless, a resident who lost her home, said that, quote, so many people that I know say we never knew. We never knew anything about the fire, end quote. The mayor of Maui said that he doesn't know he was in charge. He doesn't know who was in charge at all, which is diametrically inconceivable given that you're the mayor and you don't know who was in charge at the emergency management center. The mayor literally came out and said, quote, I'm not sure who was in charge. Former Maui Emergency Management Administrator Herman Ondaya was still in charge. He just wasn't present. He was in contact with his team, I guess by phone. I don't exactly know. End quote. So there is intense fallout from that. There's intense fallout from what exactly is happening, specifically on that level of mismanagement and incompetence. The fact that the emergency management administrator was not present and no one knew what was going on is mind-boggling and hair-curdling in itself. But he did resign. He did resign because, oops, the sirens didn't turn on. He said that he does not regret that decision.
Had we sounded the siren that night, we're afraid that people would have gone Mauka. And if that was the case, then they would have gone into the fire.
What? How does that make logical conceivable sense? We didn't sound the sirens because people were going too crazy. They were going to go crazy. Well, of course, because it's a wildfire. It's a life-threatening event. I mean, that's like saying, oops, sorry, I didn't call the cops because, you know, hey, I saw the guys rob your house and they took the jewelry and stuff and they took all your like essential stuff. But hey, I didn't call the cops because I didn't want to bother them. They were probably pretty busy. I mean, they are the cops after all. I mean, that is diametrically asinine and incredulously nefarious and stupid if that's your actual reasoning for why the sirens were not sounded. The emergency sirens are meant to alert people to a disaster. Not turning them on and deliberately doing so is not only an abdication of leadership, but an egregious act that unequivocally could have conceivably caused increased loss of life. If the sirens had been sounded, more people could have evacuated on time and in time to get out, instead of being faced with burning alive or jumping into the ocean. I mean, just completely, completely asinine. Absolutely outrageous, but that is what we are getting. Once again, that is the now former head of the Emergency Management Center who has just resigned. According to one resident, he had never heard law enforcement on loudspeakers urging people to evacuate. But once the fire got worse, he said it was already too late. By that point, it was already too late. reporting from the New York Times that they have been doing very comprehensive and direct reporting on this crisis and keeping eyes on the developments in the story. They are also able to report on the failure of the water system in Lahaina. Quote, during the frantic moments on Tuesday after wildfire jumped containment near a residential neighborhood in Lahaina, Hawaii, firefighters rushing to slow the spread were distressed to find that their hydrants were starting to run dry. Hoping to control the blaze as it took root among homes along the hillside nearly a mile above the center of town, fire crews encountered water pressure that was increasingly feeble, with the wind turning the streams into mist. Then, as the inferno stoked by hurricane-force gusts grew, roaring further toward the historic center of the town of the island of Maui, the hydrants sputtered and became largely useless. There was just no water in the hydrants, said one firefighter. The collapse of the town's water system, described to the New York Times by several people on scene, is yet another disaster factor in a confluence that ended up producing what is now the deadliest U.S. wildfire in more than 100 years. Of water forced firefighters into an extraordinary rush to save lives by risking their own, and it has left people searching for answers about how the community can better prepare for a world of fiercer winds and drier lands. End quote. In terms of accountability, Maui Senator Gil Keith Agarin is resigning after facing public criticism for his role as a private attorney in connection with his law firm over the Lahaina wildfires. His resignation is effective October 31st, given that the conflict of interest in that matter. But there were also other failures. The governor has ordered an investigation by the state's attorney general, who is seeking an outside investigation into the response by county and state officials, including the mayor of Maui himself, who said he did not know what was going on. The House Oversight Committee on Capitol Hill will launch a federal investigation into the wildfire response. The chairman of that committee, Congressman James Comer, released a statement essentially saying that we are looking to investigate this and hold people accountable and ensuring that the community gets answers. In a harrowing report, the Hawaii State Department of Education has reported that more than 2,000 children are unaccounted for in the Lahaina public school system following the wildfires on August 8th. Just completely heartbreaking to report that. While hundreds more remain missing, according to the FBI. There was a failure at the emergency management office. The sirens did not sound. Apparently, evacuation and escape plans were just non-existent. Communication networks were incapacitated instantly. Power outages knocked out cell service so no one could talk to anyone. And when people did finally start to realize what was going on, that there was a fire coming towards them, it was already too late. The damage done to Lahaina and Maui is quite literally irreparably horrifying. The fifth deadliest wildfire in U.S. history. Damage of such unimaginable proportions that it will take decades to recover. A recovery that will cost $6 billion, and no one in state government seems to know what's going on. What can be done to address this crisis, acknowledge the suffering and devastation caused to the people of Lahaina and Maui, and actually begin to ask the important questions? Because as their homes and their businesses and their cars sit in ruins, and many people are homeless, thousands of residents who have lost everything, including some of their family members to the fires, have questions. They have questions and anger tonight as words like mismanagement and resignation fill the headlines, as statements like I don't know or I didn't know who was in charge fill the headlines. Can they expect accountability? Can they expect the truth and proper responsibility in the authorities getting to the bottom of this, getting it together, and not spending excessive amounts of time blaming each other and actually beginning to address this crisis? Because they need help. The people of Lahaina and Maui, they need help. They are hurting. Charmaine Duran has over 30 years in experience in government in Hawaii. And she's a member of the Pearl City Neighborhood Board. And she's going to join me next exclusively here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show to discuss this and what can be done in terms of accountability. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. whether you put down your phone to be there for your daughter, or pick up your phone to call a helpline for your roommate, when it comes to mental health, now more than ever, every action counts.
Welcome back. So a little bit of preface before I give you this exclusive interview only on the Jeremiah Patterson Show here. The 2018 catastrophe with the emergency systems in Hawaii just failing because of that missile alert that went out to citizens. I actually got that information from her in this interview. I recorded this interview yesterday and I did not know that. So that did help in the research process and also the historical analogies for helping me understand the history of Hawaii's emergency alert system. So that was very, very helpful and insightful on her part, giving that information to me because I did not know that. So I wanted to just preface this with by saying that in the interview, you're going to hear me surprised when she gets to that. But other than that, I mean, it's just astonishing. It's an incredible interview. Also on the part of the mayor being in charge of the emergency management office, I did not know that until I interviewed Ms. Duran. But once again, this is an interview that you're going to want to hear. It's only here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show. This is the only place you will hear it. All right, buckle up. Here it is. Joining me now for the interview is Charmaine Duran. She's a member of the Pearl City Neighborhood Board. She has over 30 years of city experience in the state of Hawaii. Ms. Duran, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Aloha. Thank you for having me.
Multiple people across the map in Lahaina and Maui say that they were not alerted beforehand that there was going to be a wildfire. It has been reported in the New York Times that Maui officials knew that there was going to be a dangerous wildfire, but they still did not adequately prepare nor promptly notify citizens that this was going to happen. And while the wildfire was taking place, apparently top emergency officials were at a conference on how to fight this wildfire. What do you make of the magnitude of dysfunction and incompetence during such a critical time?
Oh, that's a big one. Okay. So first of all, there were several wildfires so just to make sure that the right information is out there. And they were fighting wildfires for several days. And a lot of people might not know when they picture Hawaii, they picture this, you know, paradise where, you know, where there's no issues. But in reality, we face tropical storms and wildfires and earthquakes and lavas and tsunami. I mean, we are in the middle of the Pacific and anything that can come at us does. And this happens quite a bit. And I'm saying that for a reason, because knowing that, we're all extremely disappointed that the emergency management in the state of Hawaii and Maui did not do what they were supposed to. And they did not alert the public like they should have, and neither did the state of Hawaii. And just so it's clear, we do know that a mistake was made, because just the other day for another wildfire on Maui, they had the sirens and they evacuated everybody. So now they've made a course correction. Mm-hmm.
As you did mention there's lots of anger and disappointment regarding what has happened in terms of the failure of the management systems. And recently it was reported that the emergency management administrator resigned and said he really didn't know who was in charge. Also, the mayor of Maui said that himself. Do you find it hard to believe that there was believable that there was some type of, miscommunication chain at such a critical juncture in the state?
Well, there shouldn't be, because we do have emergencies all the time. In addition, in 2018, we had Missilegate. And I don't know if you know about Missilegate, when there was a mistake made and we all got a notice that we were getting attacked by North Korea. After that, there was a whole bunch of investigation done. Yeah, see, that's another something else that you could do a little story on. There was an investigation, a congressional hearing, and everybody got together, and all the communication steps and all the plans were supposed to be ironed out then. And it seems like that wasn't done, because just a few years later, something broke down in the communication. So yeah, we're all surprised, because anything that was an issue should have been taken care of then. Mm. And it wasn't. I think we do a lot of time, we spend a lot of time. When I say we, it's the royal we, I mean government, I mean public servants, I mean all of us. We spend a lot of time planning in conferences, and we have war games and emergency games, but we don't do a lot of actually applying that. And I think this is a real good example of that, is that they were all sitting around talking about how they should handle emergencies. And that's as far as it goes. They you know, they put in a little piece of paper, and nobody really takes it back and see, does this work? What are the failures? And we have lots of experience to do this. I mean, we are constantly, right now it's windy and rainy. There's another storm in the Pacific. The lava is now flowing. I mean, we constantly are like in a state of exercise. And so it's really surprising that they let this drop.
Hmm.
And such a costly mistake.
I know, I can definitely understand that in terms of the anger and resentment that's going around in the community as well right now, because lots of people are, of course, homeless at the moment. Lots of people are in, you know, shelters because of the just full-scale eradication of Lahaina and the extreme damage that has been done to Maui. What can the government do to adequately, you know, I guess, make up for the mismanagement and the abdication of leadership, and actually begin now to start helping the victims of the wildfires?
Okay, so first thing is, in order to restore trust, they are really going to have to be honest about who made mistakes. And that may mean some really big, powerful political people have to step down. Mm-hmm. And while, you know, institutions like to protect their own, this is going to be one of those situations where you just have to say, hey, you made a mistake, A, B, and C, you got to go. And I think the Maui emergency management official resigning is only one of many that should happen and will come. I think the mayor, who's actually, everybody should know that in the state of Hawaii, in every single county, the mayor is actually the head of emergency management. Everybody below that is an administrator.
Wow.
So the mayor is in charge of the mayor, whether it's the city and county of Honolulu or the Big Island or Maui County, the mayor is in charge. And in California, Texas, a lot of these things follow the same structure. So in the state of Hawaii, Governor Green is the head of all emergency management. There are administrators below him, but he's in charge. And so the Maui mayor doesn't know who's in charge, but he's actually in charge.
That is astonishing.
Yeah, so I think they're all good. They don't need to wait for a report, and they don't need to wait for lawsuits. If they really want to restore trust, they just need to say, you know what, I let the ball drop. I'm sorry, and I'm out of here.
Hmm.
You know, they just need to man up and put their big boy pants on and take the blame. But it's going to be, you know, these are politicians, and this is a difficult situation. And there's going to be a whole bunch of lawyers standing around saying, don't say that, because it will increase liability at the city and the state and the county. Everybody's going to be worried about getting sued. But sometimes you just need to do the right thing. And this mm-hmm. is one of those. A whole town is gone.
Exactly. In terms of the accountability here, we know that recently a Hawaii electric firm, I believe, was just sued by the city. And we're also seeing a senator getting ready to resign for a conflict of interest, essentially his law firm being intermingled with wildfire litigation. In terms of, you know, what, you know, citizens are looking at here as, you know, just wide-scale mismanagement and disruption in the city. You talked about, you know, cleaning house to, you know, and owning up to your mistakes and resigning. I'm curious to know, because the recovery effort is going to take years, you know, just based off the pictures, just based off what's being reported, just based off what we know. I'm curious to know when, and if possible, is there a way for, like, you know, new members to be restored in government to begin the real process now that the people that have, you know, been held accountable are gone.
Once they're held accountable, I think the senator just got caught. Otherwise, he wouldn't be resigning. And, you know, obviously, I'm not sure. He's been around for a long time, so I'm not sure why he made such a mistake. Maybe he didn't realize that, you know, ethics do apply even in an emergency. I'm not sure what happened there. But, you know, two people resigning, and the senator really didn't have anything to do with the emergency. One person resigning because of the emergency and one person being held accountable is not enough. I don't think so, you know, just, and I know this is a little sidetrack and I don't want to, you know, hijack your interview.
No, you're
good.
There's
a lot of, I'm sorry if I did, it's coming off. You know, emergency management and the firefighters who we love dearly, but even there was miscommunication, the electric company, all of these things didn't do what it was supposed to according to emergency planning. And so a lot of people are now hurt. I think you have to get through all of that for real accountability. And I get the electric company and I know what the city's doing. Like I said, they're all trying to preserve and protect themselves from liability. But at the end of the day, they all need to do the right thing. Despite what the lawyers in the boardroom are saying, they need to say, hey, people are homeless and people are now deceased and missing. And those numbers may never be, those gaps may never be filled in. If you look at disasters in modern history, all of from 9/11 to now, there are always these big numbers where people cannot give closure to the family. And that may happen here. And until we have the government, and there are many layers of the government and the electric company and all the little city agencies take responsibility, people are building trust is going to be impossible. And I know you've done some reports on Hawaii's history and all of that, because I went and looked at your podcast and you do a good job. But
thank you.
That history of damage and trust is already there, right? We already have this strained relationship with government because of our history. So this is just going to add to that unless somebody does big steps to hold people accountable now before lawsuits.
In terms of the funding for helping with this crisis, what do you make of the recent funds by FEMA? I believe there was a $700 funds, and then of course $95 million committed to the island as well. What do you make of those recent funds to help Maui and Lahaina as well?
Yeah, I know people. It depends who you ask. People don't think it's enough, but people should know that that's like the immediate today. That's what we're going to give you right now. But there's a whole bunch of other funds that will kick in, including state funding and Red Cross and all of these things. And that's just a small amount. As time goes on. You know, I'm somebody who grew up near a volcano. So FEMA came in all the time to help, right? And when they come in, they connect you with much more than that, right? So they give you, so this is just cash, here you go, for you to help. You've lost everything. So we're going to give you this $700. Then we're going to connect you with food aid, and we're going to connect, you need a cell phone, go over there and get the cell phone line. You know, there's more than that. And they are going to need help, I would guess, for a good decade. It's going to take a long time for them to rebuild. And as long as there is government help at federal, state, city level, every little bit will help them get back on their feet.
You talked about the history there. This is my last question to you. You talked about the history there and how there's already distrust and you know, anguish just within the community. I wanted to ask you in regard to something that has proven, of course, to be insensitive and just, you know, frankly, just disgusting. Tourists who are, you know, continuing to party in Hawaii or continuing to snorkel and just have fun like nothing happened. What is your message to them as the community is really suffering and hurting right now?
Okay. I don't want to speak for... I know there's a lot of people that are employed by the Maui tourist industry. So I will say this, that it's important to stay away from Lahaina. And if you can, come to another island. We have a lot of tourist activities and facilities throughout the Hawaiian island. And we welcome you while they recover. But if you have to go and you have to be on Maui for whatever reason, that you'd at least stay away from that area. You know, in the past, when we have had things like lava cover 1,000 homes, we find tourists go and take pictures and take lava. Like, you know, they forget that people actually have been hurt by this serious event. So we ask that you at least respect the community and the people, and be aware that you may run into people who are extremely stressed and may not feel that you are doing making right choices. It's like going to New Orleans after Katrina. Mm-hmm. Might not be the best choice. And since that's your last question, I wanted to say, one, thank you for calling, and also to acknowledge that you have made the right choice by reaching out to Hawaii rather than flying here and popping yourself in the middle. And, you know, some flights are cheap. People can come. But yeah. I want to say it shows a lot of integrity on your part. For whatever reason, not coming actually is a good choice. And so good job. And thank you for respecting the struggle that the people of Hawaii are going through in Maui, and for highlighting it on your show.
Thank you so much. Once again, my guest is Miss Charmaine Duran. She's a member of the Pearl City Neighborhood Board. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care. Mahalo.
Mahalo. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Jeremiah Patterson Show. I hope you enjoyed this special report. I told you we were going to be continuing to follow this story because it is a story that really people have just covered for, like, you know, when it was trending. But this is, we live in a day and age, we live in a society where things happen to people and in their lives. It's not just trending. Like, this is something that actually happened. We cannot continue to cover things as a society effectively when it's trending or when it's popular and just give up on it when no one's no longer talking about it. We must continue to cover stories like this and give voice to the people who don't necessarily have voices, or give voice to the people that no one else is really paying attention to or hearing. That is what we are going to continue to do on the Jeremiah Patterson Show as the work continues in terms of the recovery efforts and the people of Hawaii getting answers. All right, thank you for listening to this episode of the Jeremiah Patterson Show. Thank you for actually being with me this entire week for this 3-episode run. Thank you to my girlfriend for the motivation and inspiration, as well as to my mom for hinting at the fact that I actually did record 3 episodes this entire week while also simultaneously maintaining all A's. I know, remarkable. But, you know, I'm proud of myself on that effort. But I also wanted to thank our guest tonight, Miss Charmaine Duran, for coming on the Jeremiah Patterson Show and speaking with us and giving us your knowledge and just your incredible insight on, you know, with your experience in government here and coming on the show to talk about this. We really appreciate it. And we're going to continue to cover this as a story on the show. I told you we're going to continue to follow the story and chase down the story as we get answers and more unfolds and more develops. All right, take care. This is the first Saturday of the month. So this is the first episode of September, of course. I'll take a week break, of course, as noted in our new show plans, and I'll see you again on Saturday, September 16th. All right, take care.